many of you that thought I was a very strange mentor and do something, And I took him for the super series and then I had it. And that was a first day. I didn't remember many, many things about that. But I remember being in the opening lineup, the first football game in the history of the school. And I remember correctly, we had our football team was made up of 9th and 10th grade. Yeah, nobody had it on a freshman. And I was running out on the football team and the stand was filled, you know, with a lot of users in that first game. And I remember my mouth was dry because I was so scared. And I remember the poor band playing the monkey rap with the tail around my
eyes. Could you have a few boys?
you remember it, don't you?
Of course.
And then, oh, the monkey rap is tail around the flagpole.
That's as much as what I'm saying.
Yeah, right. But anyway, I remember my first game, and I remember that when the kickoff, I ran down, I'm not sure I knew what I was supposed to do, but I know that it didn't take long for my legs to be knocked out from under me. And I do know that we lost that first game 32-0, but we won 4 and lost 4. That was not bad for
me.
But I remember being part, we had a little club about a club that I belonged to in Ottawa. It was called Cater Sigma Club. And I was starting in Ottawa in Colfax, if I remember, and also high school, and beyond high school. The members stayed together for quite a few years. And I used to be able to rattle off all the names of the members for alphabetically. I probably still can rattle off some of them. But I remember I used to be the secretary, and I used to call it all by name: Alfred Adler, Cullen Edwards, Herbert Fleischman, Goldman, Greenberg. If I could name them, it was Inky Goldman. And we used to have a lot of fun. We said dances, and we said basketball, so we played a whole load of songs. I had a basketball show. I remember that singing program. Give us a little song years ago. Hard to believe that they had a basketball show and a singing program.
Is that in the new complex where it is located now?
So that's something that you may not have known. No, we had our basketball games at the temple. And
where did your family belong to?
Well, I'll tell you something. When I was in Oakland, my family wanted the Tree of Life. Because the Tree of Life, then, as you guys have probably heard them told, was on Craft Avenue. And I went to the Jesus School in Sunday School there. I do Sunday School, I think he was the school. I'm not sure I know what to tell you about all the Jesus School there.
What kind of extracurricular activities were you in besides the football?
I was in a player's guild. Mm-hmm. And Bill Archer was the leader or the counselor or whatever term it was. And I remember being in the plays, but I remember that one of the things I remember most was something called Darius Gaiety. And the thing I remember most about that was that I, who was a member of the football team, did an imitation of one of the ballet dancers. Some of them were Bridgman, or I forget, Rose has probably told you, I forget who. But that really brought down the house. It's one of the things I'll never forget. was a ballet dance. I remember even the, one of the things I did when I learned how to swim was a Tuesday day. And if you had time, if you had it on video, I'd do it for you.
You know, that is true.
That was one of the main extracurricular activities. I'm sure when this thing's over, I think of it. A million other things that I didn't tell you. But I was on the tractor too. It's interesting, I was on the basketball team, the Stetson basketball team that I was on. And I broke my leg in a non-organized football game right before we started the season. And I really felt terrible because that basketball team went on to win the city high school championship and the freshman basketball championship. And I remember who the members of the team were there. There was a forward, there was Hattie Levine, who was my closest friend, and Lenny Levy, who was later was a coach of the Pittsburgh Pirates baseball team. And the center was A. Jones, they called him. He's now A. E. Jones. He's vice president in charge of purchases of copper company. He's also still a close friend of mine. And the guards were Johnny Kilpatrick and Dean DeYoff. Dean came back to the 50th anniversary. I remember that basketball team so well. I remember a lot of the football players that were on the team with me. One of them was the captain of the team. His name was Johnny Webb. And you'll never guess where he works now.
Yes.
He went from Harvard, he went to J&L, and he became a foreman. But he took an early retirement, and he asked him to and we gave him a job. He now works at our Ambridge job. And I remember one day going to the end of the plant, I called him, and I went to see him, and everybody wondered how the guy working in the plant knew to pick up. But anyway, I picked him up, and we went out to dinner together, just within the past year. But I remember many of the players. Played with me. Another guy who I knew very well and who came to work here later was Randy Depot, who worked for our company for a number of years. Strangely, I have, you probably know, I had a bout of cancer that point. And when I went out to the hospital for my first radiation, of all people who run into Randy Depot, who was also getting radiation for cancer. So, you know, it's a small world. But Randy was on the team with me. And many, many others. I saw some of them at the 50th reunion. Chuck Hayes, Maynard LaForge, and Henry Sperling, who died a couple of years ago, back down. I don't know if he's still living or not. Eddie Andrews was on the team with me, and he's now a movie actor. And I'm still in touch with him. I called him to see if I could get him to come to Pittsburgh. Saw him when I was on the West Coast, had dinner at his house. And Davey Andrews is an official, I don't know of where, but he's official of Sunset. He was at our reunion, but he was on the team.
I get the impression from the people you're telling us about that you've had many friends, both Jewish and Gentile.
I did, and I went to the YMCA camp a few years. I went to Camp Porter and Camp Conical.
And my kids went to Conical.
Did they? Well, yeah.
One of them.
It's interesting. I didn't think of it until now, but I've always had many friends, both Jewish and Christian. I did then and I do now. And I had, and my son, follows the same tradition. He has many friends here, and many friends here,
was there much anti-Semitism, say, in Alderdice?
Well, I don't know. There were probably some. I think, remember that song, "The Answer is Not to Hurt, to Hate"? It's probably true, because I guess that some of the kids in the Greenfield area were taught to hate and taught to prison. I think it's not so great. But I do remember one of my very first days at all of that, I still remember quite a few fights. After a while, I did some things that got to respect me, because I think I won all my fights. But I remember the very first day, of one of those first days in school, there were two brothers named Schnupp, they were twins. And they, for the very first day, started to bully me. And we agreed to meet after school. And we did. They had a fight. I don't think they ever bullied me again, because I beat the heck out of them. But I was kind of a guy who Jewish kids look to protect them. Well, anybody picked a fight with anybody, they'd say, yeah, that was cool.
That was quite a responsibility.
Yeah, but I fought a few guys, and after that, there was no problem. But I think there was a little bit, but I think it was disappeared. I think the kids get to know each other. I think it was more at the beginning than after. So the kids get to know each other. And after all, we wound up playing football on the same team. You can be sure there was no anti-Semitism on that football team. And, you know, at first, when you get to know each other, you forget about what somebody's religion is, or what the color of their skin was, although we didn't have any black kids on our team.
Were there any in the school at that time?
I only remember one. Her name, the first name was Mildred. I can't remember her last name, but she's in the yearbook.
I'm sure you didn't have any particular health or medical problems as a youngster.
No, I was a very healthy kid. The only thing I remember was I saw a few of the measles that most kids had, and I had my doctor, and I had my removed, and that's about the only time I was in the hospital until I became an adult.
But there really wasn't all that much difference in the kind of care available then.
I don't know. I guess not.
Yeah, our outline is for everybody.
Yeah.
So sometimes we're talking to much older people.
Yeah.
You know, so there's much more of a contrast.
Yeah, well, it depends partly also on who your parents are. My mother was very helpful for her kids and for herself. So she was, she made sure we ate the right food, ate plenty of fruits and vegetables, didn't eat too much candy and cake. You know, she kind of watched.
Well, tell us about June and Netta. We haven't talked about them at all.
Well, June is 4 years younger than me, and she was a fantastic dancer. And I remember her. I remember year after year going to Kermit's. I even remember the name of her first teacher, Miss Sexton. But she eventually studied with Gene Kelly. And she was so pleased when Gene was back in the area. She and her husband went to see him just a year or so ago. But that was her great interest, so much so that when she, a little later in life, she had her own dancing school in her home. She taught kids. But we were a pretty close family. We met her many years younger. But I can't, remember that much about Netta, about Jim. I do remember that when Netta came, it's an interesting psychologically. She must have been like my daughter, even, she was 16 beginning, I was just going to this point. I'm not part of it that way because I now have a mental block between my daughter Eleanor and my sister Netta. I use their names interchangeably. And so it must be that I must have always thought of Netta like my little self.
You didn't treat her that way. You were like a big brother then.
I guess.
She treated me like that.
But, yeah, I know. I was kind of protective. Like I wasn't, because June and I were fighting all the time. I remember my sister June. But then, once in a while we had a fight, and she June, I thought June was all jealous. So, we had a fight and I hit her, and I said, I can't. And I can't remember to ask me questions I can answer them about those, about my sisters, and I can't remember too much to say.
She was a big friend of this man, and I remember that because I was part of that.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Well, our family, a lot of the cases she had, as I said, in the very early years of collecting the Thunder Island, that was before Nevis Town. But then later, when my dad and Ben Rachel used to start playing golf, they'd go plan trips together. You know, that's a funny thing, my dad and Ben Rachel used to decide what they'd do with their boys for summer. And so it happened that Ralph and I remained friends all these years. I mean, he's still my friend, he lives out to West Virginia. But one year they sent us to Camp Red Feather, and another year they sent us to Camp Simpson. But often we take family trips together, kind of late, special things, and I take golf and things like that.
Did you go on beyond all the dice? Did you go to college?
Oh, I went just for one semester. I can tell you about after trip.
Okay.
After trip, while I was a kid, I just left from September of 1932 until February. 1933 for one semester. And around January 32, I said to my dad, "Dad, I don't want to go to college anymore. I don't like it. I'm not doing very well." And he said, "Oh, that's all right. You're a grown boy. You do what you want to do. You're an adult. You want to go to school for 2 weeks. But don't come to me for a job, because I'm looking for college graduates." Well, I said, okay, and I'm sure he thought that meant that I was going to continue. And I knew that I meant, okay, I wasn't going to work for him. So I continued school until the end of the semester, took my final exam. But my report card, and this is going to put him in front of the kids because I finished it. Never said a word to my mother and dad. But I planned to leave town the very next morning. And I did. And I didn't want to arouse their curiosity by doing anything with a suitcase. And so I got a suit box and I put some underwear, coat articles and whatever I needed in it, put a string around it and hid it in my cupboard. And get up to about 5 o'clock the next morning, maybe 5:30, and this was in the middle of the winter February. So I left a note in the mailbox. And I said, "Dear Mother and Dad, I'm not going to worry you, but I'm leaving town. Not running away from home, just leaving town. And I'm going to Washington, D.C. I don't want you to worry about me. I'll call you tonight." Yeah, it wasn't like running away and then kids never knew where they were. And someday my mother will tell you a story about that.
I remember this as a legend from when I was a kid. You had once done this.
Well, my mother could tell you really the story about the night before we were having dinner. She had apple upside down cake with pineapple upside down. I don't remember, but I loved it. And I said, can I have another piece? He said, no, I'm going to save it for tomorrow. And I said, no, can I have another piece? I don't need another piece tomorrow. He said, no, there's another piece tomorrow. And she never forgave herself for not giving me that piece of pineapple upside down cake. But I remember leaving town hitchhiking to Washington. I had a, if I remember correctly, I had $1.50 in my pocket.
And it was the middle of the Depression.
Well, I'll tell you something. I'll just tell you something that's more difficult. There's a, there's three things about memory. There's the way it happened. And then there's the way you remember that it happened. Then there's a way to tell it, that you tell it, which could be slightly different too, because some people take some poetic license, which I try not to do. But in my mind, I had $1 in my half in my pocket. Who knows, I might have had $3.50, but I don't think I did. I think I had $1.50. But I know that I spent my very last 85 cents, that's a lot for a telephone call. But I did spend 85 cents, my last 85 cents, calling Pittsburgh and telling my mother that. My mother and dad that I was in Washington, I was okay. The truth was, I wasn't okay. I didn't have a place to sleep. But I went from rooming house to rooming house, trying to get somebody to give me a room. Or, you know, and I told them I'd give get a job the next day to pay them. Well, everybody required advance payment. I didn't have any money. And I had to have a place to sleep, so I went to the Helping Hand. And they wouldn't allow me to sleep there because I wasn't a resident of Washington. They sent me to a place called the Transit Jail. So one of them was on Pennsylvania Avenue. And I went to the Transit Jail. It was the worst flop house I ever saw. And of course, I didn't sleep there. I went, they gave me a bed, but I couldn't sleep there. But I walked around all night. And the next day, I made a few bucks. Or a few pennies, whatever I needed, enough to have a down payment on a room. And I went back to 16th Indiana Avenue in Washington, D.C., and I got a room. And I do remember that I split it with some of the guys that I didn't know, because it's $1.50 each a week. And there was a cardboard between us and a guy named the guy we called Uncle Billy, who was a drunk. We heard he kept us up all night every night until they finally put him in the police station. The police station was next door. And I remember we'd go visit him next door, Uncle Billy. But and we, this guy and I, we'd go around. Well, I did it mainly on my own, but we did some things together. We'd go around and we'd bum meals and restaurants. But I always say, could I do some work for something to eat? And they never asked me to do any work. I remember one interesting story. The one place where they said go around the back instead of sitting at the table in the restaurant, I went around the back and they gave me a package. I didn't want a package of their leftovers, so I threw it in a garbage can. But they also gave me some cup of coffee with a lid on it. I don't drink coffee. I put it in my pocket, and this was kind of the heart of the Depression. I walked down the street. I wasn't gone 3 minutes faster, and some bum walked up to me and said, could I bum a nickel for a cup of coffee? I put my hand in my pocket, and I handed the guy a cup of coffee. But anyway, I did bum meals and restaurants and did odd jobs. So I went from door to door. I once solicited suits for a tailor shop. After a while, but I didn't do very well. A few people gave me a suit, but then they wouldn't give a suit to a strange kid, so I didn't do very good there. Then I sold Hoyt products from door to door, and I did odd jobs, everybody always treated me very well, but I had enough money to pay for the room. or I had to buy something to eat. It's amazing. For 18 cents, I could buy a loaf of bread and a quart of milk. And boy, a loaf of bread and a quart of milk sure fills you up. Several times I just ate a loaf of bread, a quart of milk. And then we'd go to the produce place, and we'd buy some vegetables. This guy, he wanted to experiment. And I remember we asked this place where we had the room if we could use the kitchen. We chopped up all the vegetables and poured in water, and we cooked some vegetable soup. I remember that. I finally got a job on a construction project. It happened to be Rust Engineering, and my father knew Mr. Rust, but he had nothing to do with my getting the job. I got it on my own as a laborer, and I worked for 40 cents an hour. I remember we're making $19.20 a week, 6 days a week. And that was in 1933. It was the NRA was just beginning to come in. NRA was the National Recovery Act. And I had built a big gas holder, this construction project. It's still there and there. It's right outside of Washington, Mount Rainier. I'll never, never forget my first day on that job, because I got the job, but I was still living at 6th Street Indiana Avenue, which was a long way from this place northeast, right in Maryland, right beyond the district line. And it was in the heart of the winter. And so I got this job. I had to be there at 7 o'clock in the morning. I had no idea how I was going to get there. And this day I had $1.30 in my pocket. I got up and I start walking around, and I went into a place. Very few places are open, but they had this coffee shop with a counter, you know, and people drink coffee. And I said, how would I get, where would I get a bus or something to take me? And I gave them the address. There's no bus that goes there. That's, you know, way off. And they said, you have to drive there. I can't drive there. I have to be there. Well, I did something. I had dinner with Dick and Jenny Thornburg, and I told them this story. They couldn't believe it. And I had the nerve to hail a cab. I was downtown Washington. And I got into the cab, and I said, gave me the address, and I said, take me there. When he brought me there, I said, I don't know how to tell you this, but I'm going to need your name and address. I'm going to give you $1.30, and the rest I'm going to have to mail you, because this is my first day in the job, and I don't have any money. You know what the cab driver said? He says, that's okay, kid. Forget it. It had to be $8. It was so far away. He said, that's okay, kid. Forget it. He said, and remember, someday some kid's going to want you to give him a to do something, to give them a lift and give them a hand on something. And I never forgot it. And I bet you I've returned that to kid 100 times since. I never forgot that cab driver. So he didn't want to give me his name and address. I never forget that cab driver. So I was in Washington for, I think, about a year and a half. So my father decided that he was willing to hire a guy who'd graduated. And I came back to work for the company. I'm not sure when it was, early 34 probably, and maybe it was a year. And I was the manager of the shop office. That was my first job. And I made less per week for my father than I could work for the construction contract. I wasn't sure I wanted to take the job.
At what point had the company gone from being your grandfather's junkyard to Levinson Steel?
Well, in 1926, the company moved from the junkyard on Pride Street to its first steel fabricating plant. Just a few to give them to do something, to give them a lift, and give them a hand on something. And I never forgot it. And I bet you I've returned that to kid 100 times since. I never forgot that cab driver. So he didn't want to give me his name like that. I'll never forget that cab driver. So I was in Washington for, I guess about a year and a half, when my father decided that he was willing to hire a guy who'd graduated from college. And I came back to work for the company. I'm not sure when it was, early 34 probably. And maybe it was a year. And I was a manager of the shop office. That was my first job. And I made less per week for my father than I could work in a construction contract. I wasn't sure I wanted to take the job.
At what point had the company gone from being your grandfather's junkyard to Levinson Steel?
Well, in 1926, the company moved from the junkyard on Pride Street to its first steel fabricating plant, just a few blocks from here at 23rd and Josephine Street on the south side.